This is Bloomberg Intelligence.
Uber wants to beat Amazon of retail, of e-commerce.
The Disney Plus service might actually end up benefiting Netflix.
In-depth research and data on 2,000 companies and 130 industries.
Capital return is the key story for the U.S. banks.
The telcos naturally are moving into content distribution. I think it's a good move.
Bloomberg Intelligence with Alex Steele and Paul Sweeney on Bloomberg Radio.
Over the next hour, we will dig inside the big business stories impacting Wall Street and the global markets.
Each and every week, we provide in-depth research and data on some of the 2,000 companies and 130 industries our analysts cover worldwide.
Today, we're going to take a look at vaccine distribution hurdles. There are a lot of them.
Plus, the heavy truck outlook for 2021.
But we want to begin with Airbnb's IPO and to help us walk through its leverage potential versus its peers and what kind of pop we might see. We want to welcome Bloomberg Intelligence senior industry analyst Mandeep Singh. Mandeep, love talking to you. Why would Airbnb go public in the middle of a coronavirus?
Well, so I think one of the things they're trying to prove is their business model is stress tested now with, you know, travel getting decimated by coronavirus and pretty much people having to reconsider their travel plans for the near to medium term. The company is still able to, manage this business environment and really, do it much better than peers like Expedia. So our sense is, look, the metrics don't look that great right now. The top line potential doesn't look that great in the near to medium term. But this is still a very large market. People are not going to stop traveling. And, you know, it will come back. And Airbnb, with its direct traffic, really has a long runway. It's a category leader in alternative accommodations. Yes, they will get hit by, you know, the shift from urban to suburbs, but at the same time, they are the largest player when it comes to the alternative accommodations, and that shows up in all the metrics we, came across in the S1.
So, Mandeep, we know that the travel business, whether it's the airlines or the hotels, again, have been just decimated. Airlines, you know, still well below kind of 2019 levels. Give us a sense of how Airbnb's business has been impacted by the pandemic.
Yeah, so one of the things that stood out to us is Airbnb's third quarter bookings is down 18%. And when you compare that to, let's say, the large hotel chains, Marriott, Hyatt, Hilton, for them, the bookings are down almost 60 to 70%. Now, how did Airbnb do that? It's because they have a lot of inventory for domestic travel. So we think Airbnb's business model is much more diversified than, you know, the large OTAs or the large hotel chains, simply because people will look for, you know, safe travel options where they can practice social distancing at the same time. You know, it's close by to where they live. And Airbnb has done particularly well on that front. Prior to COVID, they were getting about 50% of their bookings internationally. Now they are getting just 20%, but still they have been able to, you know, show pretty decent bookings. And that is a function of, you know, people choosing to travel domestically.
So if that's the case, then does Airbnb not get as much of a recovery pop like the hotels would once we get a vaccine?
Well, so in terms of the metrics, yes, the the base is a lot lower for the large hotel chains once there is a vaccine, and you will see higher growth rates. But in terms of the long-term potential, Airbnb has exposure to both urban rentals, international vacations, domestic travel. So I think the scale that they have been able to gather over the last 10 years, it's a function of how well they have created this new segment within travel, alternative accommodations, as well as they've been able to, you know, gain more exposure to where the traditional hotels used to have all their bookings. So our view is it will participate in the recovery, although the growth rates may not be as pronounced as you're going to see for the hotels, you know, which will be around 80 to 90% next year once there is a vaccine.
So, Mandeep, talk to us about the hosts, the people that open up their doors to travelers. Has that declined? I mean, I'm not sure I'd want strangers coming in and out of my house during a pandemic.
Yeah, so, there is a deceleration in, you know, the kind of pace at which they add new hosts, as well as, rate at which they add these guests who use Airbnb as a platform. But you look at some of their cohort numbers. So Airbnb's host retention rates improve over time to the extent that, you know, they have almost 100% retention in year 3 and 4 if the host stays with them. Same thing with, you know, guests. The retention rate improves over time. Now, that thing is not seen with the other OTAs like Expedia and Booking, which rely a lot on paid searches. You know, they spend about $4 to $5 billion on Google every year just to get traffic, and there isn't a lot of repeat traffic for the large OTA chains. Mm. In case of Airbnb, that's different. They get a lot of repeat traffic, and they have very high retention among hosts because they cater to this younger demographic, the 18 to 35 years old, and those customers and hosts among them.
All right, Mandeep, thanks a lot. Mandeep Singh, Bloomberg Intelligence Senior Industry Analyst.
Coming up on the program, promising news on the COVID-19 vaccine development front. But what about getting it out?
You are listening to Bloomberg Intelligence on Bloomberg Radio, providing in-depth research and data on 2,000 companies and 130 industries. You can access Bloomberg Intelligence through BIGO on the terminal. I'm Alex Deal.
And I'm Paul Sweeney. It's 13 minutes past the hour, and this is Bloomberg.
This is Bloomberg Intelligence with Alex Steele and Paul Sweeney on Bloomberg Radio.
Well, some good news over the past few weeks on the development of potentially groundbreaking COVID-19 vaccines, but there's still a lot to be figured out. Our next guest points out concerns over distribution hurdles. Joining us to break it down is Bloomberg Intelligence Senior Healthcare Analyst Jonathan Palmer. Jonathan, thanks so much for joining us here. You know, we were just chatting that, you know, the focus, it appears, is going to be moving from the science, which we're getting a lot of good science coming out of these pharma companies, to now the distribution of vaccines in the coming months. Give us a sense of kind of how you think that's going to play out.
Sure, Paul, and thanks for having me on. You know, there's been a lot of press around the hurdles that we have here for vaccine distribution, particularly around some of the novel technologies that these first vaccines utilized. Both Pfizer and Moderna are what's called messenger RNA vaccines, and they require some pretty stringent cold storage requirements. And so it's been getting a lot of press around, you know, how do we actually tackle this problem? But my view is that, you know, while it's going to be more difficult than our typical vaccine distribution program, you know, much of the logistics and infrastructure here is already in place. Mm-hmm. Distributors distribute hundreds of millions of doses of vaccines every year. For example, the seasonal flu vaccine is close to 200 million doses per year that get distributed. And I think what we're going to have here is really a trial run between now and year end. So it's likely that these two vaccines will be approved in December, and then they'll start, you know, shipping doses. And I think we'll get a dry run of how this is actually going to work in practice versus, you know, a full widespread distribution across the entire U.S.
Give us more perspective on when we say cold. What do we mean by cold? Like, just how cold do they have to stay? When can they just sit and hang out in a freezer? When can they just sit and hang out? Walk us through that.
Sure. So these messenger RNA vaccines from Moderna and Pfizer require what they call ultra cold storage for just keeping them safe for, let's say, up to 6 months. And that's, in the Pfizer case, I believe it's negative 75 degrees Celsius. It's a little lower for Moderna, and that's just to keep it on the shelf and stable for a couple months. Once they get thawed, there's a different requirement. And really interestingly, when Moderna updated us on their program, they actually have some new positive storage requirements. And so Pfizer still needs to remain pretty cold once it's thawed, and it has a shelf life of about 5 to 7 days, they said. once it's taken out of that freezer. But the Moderna vaccine, they now say can be held in a regular freezer that you would find in a doctor's office or a hospital facility for up to 30 days. So there's really just the aspect of storing it for 6 months. And I think when we think about what's going to happen in terms of the cadence of when this vaccine and these doses come to market, these aren't going to be sitting in the fridges for 6 months. You know, they're probably going to get thawed out and delivered or administered immediately.
Jonathan, so what are the companies that actually manufacture these vaccines? Are they going to be manufactured by the pharmaceutical companies themselves, or are there just plants all over the world that manufacture pharmaceuticals?
Well, there's a lot of different partnerships out there for the various companies, and so there are some contract manufacturers who are stepping in, some of the big companies like Lonza and Thermo Fisher and others, and Cytiva, which is a unit of Danaher. But primarily, I think for the first two that are going to come to market, Pfizer and Moderna, they're going to be doing a lot of the manufacturing themselves. In fact, okay. Pfizer has two facilities, one in Michigan and one in Belgium, where they're going to be doing some of the initial logistics out of those two spots.
Oh, well, I was going to say, in terms of internationally, like, where does this leave those vaccines? Because you can make it sound like it's no big deal, the cold storage here in the U.S., but in Africa, that's not going to fly.
No, and that's where really I think we're still in a wait-and-see mode, and we have to see how some of these other vaccines come to market. You know, there was just some positive news out of AstraZeneca and their vaccine, and they've probably been the most prolific with signing deals with other companies, and they don't have that. They're using a different technology, so they don't have the very stringent requirements. So really, we need to see the AstraZenecas, the Mercks, and the J&Js come to market with that second wave of vaccines to really come up with a global solution that, you know, that isn't just for the developed nations.
So, John, what are some of the companies, just remind us, that are in the drug distribution business that we should be paying attention to?
Sure. In the U.S., there's primarily three on the distributor side, and they're called the big three. It's McKesson, AmerisourceBergen, and Cardinal Health. Now, McKesson has a contract with the CDC to distribute vaccines in a pandemic, so they're kind of first in line to quarterback these efforts. But there's really everybody across the supply chains involved. HHS has signed deals with the big retail pharmacies to administer the vaccines once they're available. Also, CVS and Walgreens have signed contracts to deliver vaccines to long-term care facilities once they become available. And the CEO of CVS has even said most recently that, you know, once they get the green light, they think they can deliver some of those vaccines to those long-term care facilities in under 48 hours.
Wow.
Are these companies making any money off of this?
I think they'll make some incremental profits, but it's not really going to move the needle. You know, these are all pretty
pun
big
totally
companies.
Intended, by the way. Get it? Sorry,
yeah,
go ahead. Keep going.
It's not really going to move the needle too much for any of these guys, but I think, you know, from a social perspective, you know, everybody in healthcare wants to do the right thing, and so I think they see this as a, you know, the value here is more in the PR push than at the bottom line.
So how have these stocks done, these distribution stocks? Again, I kind of feel like it's now up to, you know, the supply chain people. They're really going to be coming to the fore here and saving the day. How have some of those drug distribution companies done?
They've been middling along, to be honest with you, this year. You know, there was a lot of concerns when we went into lockdown around what's going to happen to drug distribution and medical supply distribution. And so, you know, there was a lot of stocking in the March and April months this year that saw big increases for those businesses. And now they've primarily normalized. You know, the bigger news in this space, not to get off topic, has been the emergence of an Amazon pharmacy. And that's probably been more of a headwind to these distribution names than anything in the vaccine world.
Hey, Jonathan, thanks so much for joining us and giving us some of your thoughts on these vaccines and the distribution of these vaccines. Jonathan Palmer, Bloomberg Intelligence Senior Healthcare Analyst.
So smart. All right, coming up on the program, it's the outlook for heavy trucks in 2021.
You're listening to Bloomberg Intelligence on Bloomberg Radio, providing in-depth research and data on 2,000 companies and 130 industries. You can access Bloomberg Intelligence via BI Go on the terminal. I'm Paul Sweeney.
And I'm Alex Steele. It is 25 minutes past the hour, and this is Bloomberg.
This is Bloomberg Intelligence with Alex Steele and Paul Sweeney on Bloomberg Radio.
We'll be here each and every week at this time, tapping into our Bloomberg Intelligence analysts covering some 2,000 companies and 130 industries worldwide.
Our next guest writes that the heavy truck 2021 outlook includes projected surges in orders, and it looks pretty solid. To discuss, we want to welcome Bloomberg Intelligence industry analyst Christopher Giolino. All right, Chris, what's your thesis for 2021? And is it as simple like, as the economy recovers, so do trucks?
Yeah, so we think that an acceleration in heavy truck orders with an improving freight outlook and economic visibility as we have better clarity around the election, some promising vaccine developments could support strong double-digit increases in truck production next year. Current industry forecasts are projecting a 15 to 20% increase in Class 8 truck production to about 249,000 units. We think that's still too conservative. Orders have sequentially improved each month since bottoming in April. That includes an 83% increase year over year in October.
Wow.
And we're running at a 270,000 six-month annualized rate, which is well above industry estimates. And we think that's going to support higher than expected build rates. You also have low inventories, a rising backlog, which is now back above pre-pandemic levels. So the backdrop moving into next year is really quite favorable for the likes of Packard, Navistar, Volvo, Cummins, and really the rest of the heavy truck supply chain.
Wow. I mean, I wish I shared in their optimism here. But so, Chris, I mean, how bad, when hindsight, when you put your hindsight goggles on, how bad was 2020 for your big heavy truck business?
It was bad, but I would say it was acutely bad. And really, it was really around 2Q where we saw kind of more than a 70% drop in production. Most of the factories had extended shutdowns due to the virus. For the year, we're looking for production to be down somewhere in the neighborhood of 40%. That's some of the biggest drops within the machinery sector. But on the flip side of that, it's really the truck sector has really rebounded at a torrid pace since the depths of the pandemic earlier this year. We have just 5 consecutive months of double-digit order growth. You've had the elevated freight rates and tighter capacity. And then you also have, like I said, the October orders, which I think are really the most encouraging sign about next year, because October is an important month because it typically is when you see fleets placing orders for the year ahead. Mm-hmm. So it kind of gives us an early look as to how 2021 may shape up. And what we saw was a very, very strong order month. Fleets are becoming more confident. They're placing large orders, not only for replacement, but for expansion purposes. So now 1 month doesn't make a trend, but it's certainly a positive sign heading into next year.
Is there going to be the supply to fulfill that demand?
There is. The supply chain has been remarkably resilient this year. Most of the supply chain for the truck market is centered in North America. A lot of it comes from Mexico. So there was some concern earlier this year if the supply chain was going to be able to ramp up if we saw order spike, in which we have. We're not seeing or hearing of any potential bottlenecks. It's really kind of been moving along as best as it possibly could have.
So, Chris, who's buying all these trucks? Who's putting in these orders? Is this kind of like the J.B. Hunts of the world, the big trucking companies?
Yeah, so if you think about the truck market, and one, yes, it is the larger fleets that are placing orders now for the year ahead. Basically, they tried to get in line and reserve their build slots. But the truck market's incredibly fragmented. The larger public transports only make up a small fraction of the market. It's really the mom and pops, the local owner operators that may only have a few trucks. They are the largest segment of the market. Now, like I said, it's the larger fleets that are placing these orders for October to hold their positions for next year. But they tend to be obviously the leading indicator for the group.
Okay, devil's advocate. We don't get stimulus from the U.S. government. The vaccine takes longer. There's no all of a sudden there's a vaccine, we're fine, everyone go out and spend stuff, pop. How economically sensitive are these companies and orders to news like that?
They're very sensitive, and they move very quickly. These are very short-cycle businesses, so orders and cancellations can turn month to month. It's part of the reason we like to look at kind of a 3-month or a 6-month rolling average, which we've seen that kind of sustained here. But if there are setbacks, no doubt that will certainly hit the group. What I would say, what's probably one of the more encouraging signs for trucks next year, the industrial or the manufacturing sector, which is really a big driver of demand for new trucks, that thus far has been on kind of the slower recovery trajectory. So if we get a little bit of a pickup from the manufacturing sector, we think that could even support a stronger freight outlook.
Hey, Chris, thanks a lot. We really appreciate it. Bloomberg Intelligence industry analyst Chris Giolino.
Coming up on the program, Retail in Focus.
I'm actually not buying shoes this year. I'm buying furniture. I feel like there that's a trend. Yeah. You're listening to Bloomberg Intelligence on Bloomberg Radio, providing in-depth research and data on 2,000 companies and 130 industries. You can access Bloomberg Intelligence through BIGO on the terminal. I'm Alex Steele.
And I'm Paul Sweeney. It's 39 minutes past the hour, and this is Bloomberg.
This is Bloomberg Intelligence with Alex Steele and Paul Sweeney on Bloomberg Radio.
We'll be here each and every week at this time, tapping into our Bloomberg Intelligence analysts covering some 2,000 companies and 130 industries worldwide.
Our next guest writes that the heavy truck 2021 outlook includes projected surges in orders, and it looks pretty solid to discuss. We want to welcome Bloomberg Intelligence industry analyst Christopher Giolino. All right, Chris, what's your thesis for 2021? And is it as simple like as the economy recovers, so do trucks?
Yeah, so we think that an acceleration in heavy truck orders with an improving freight outlook and economic visibility as we have better clarity around the election, some promising vaccine developments could support strong double-digit increases in truck production next year. Current industry forecasts are projecting a 15 to 20% increase in Class 8 truck production to about 249,000 units. We think that's still too conservative. Orders have sequentially improved each month since bottoming in April. That includes an 83% increase year over year in October.
Wow.
And we're running at a 270,000 six-month annualized rate, which is well above industry estimates. And we think that's going to support higher than expected build rates. You also have low inventories, a rising backlog, which is now back above pre-pandemic levels. So the backdrop moving into next year is really quite favorable for the likes of PACCAR, Navistar, Volvo, Cummins, and really the rest of the heavy truck supply chain.
Wow. I mean, I wish I shared in their optimism here. But so, Chris, I mean, how bad, when hindsight, when you put your hindsight goggles on, how bad was 2020 for your big heavy truck business?
It was bad, but I would say it was acutely bad. And really, it was really around 2Q where we saw kind of more than a 70% drop in production. Most of the factories had extended shutdowns due to the virus. For the year, we're looking for production to be down somewhere in the neighborhood of 40%. That's some of the biggest drops within the machinery sector. But on the flip side of that, it's really the truck sector has really rebounded at a torrid pace since the depths of the pandemic earlier this year. We have just 5 consecutive months of double-digit order growth. You've had the elevated freight rates and tighter capacity. And then you also have, like I said, the October orders, which I think are really the most encouraging sign about next year, because October is an important month because it typically is when you see fleets placing orders for the year ahead. Mm-hmm. So it kind of gives us an early look as to how 2021 may shape up. And what we saw was a very, very strong order month. Fleets are becoming more confident. They're placing large orders, not only for replacement, but for expansion purposes. So now 1 month doesn't make a trend, but it's certainly a positive sign heading into next year.
Is there going to be the supply to fulfill that demand?
There is. The supply chain has been remarkably resilient this year. Most of the supply chain for the truck market is centered in North America. A lot of it comes from Mexico. So there was some concern earlier this year if the supply chain was going to be able to ramp up if we saw order spike, in which we have. We're not seeing or hearing of any potential bottlenecks. It's really kind of been moving along as best as it possibly could have.
So, Chris, who's buying all these trucks? Who's putting in these orders? Is this kind of like the J.B. Hunts of the world, the big trucking companies?
Yeah, so if you think about the truck market, and one, yes, it is the larger fleets that are placing orders now for the year ahead. Basically, they try to get in line and reserve their build slots. But the truck market's incredibly fragmented. The larger public transports only make up a small fraction of the market. It's really the mom and pops, the local owner operators that may only have a few trucks. They are the largest segment of the market. Now, like I said, it's the larger fleets that are placing these orders for October to hold their positions for next year. But they tend to be, obviously, the leading indicator for the group.
Okay, devil's advocate. We don't get stimulus from the U.S. government. The vaccine takes longer. There's no all of a sudden there's a vaccine, we're fine, everyone go out and spend stuff, pop. How economically sensitive are these companies and orders to news like that?
They're very sensitive, and they move very quickly. These are very short-cycle businesses, so orders and cancellations can turn month to month. It's part of the reason we like to look at kind of a three-month or a six-month rolling average, which we've seen that kind of sustained here. But if there are setbacks, no doubt that will certainly hit the group. What I would say, what's probably one of the more encouraging signs for trucks next year, the industrial or the manufacturing sector, which is really a big driver of demand for new trucks, that thus far has been on kind of the slower recovery trajectory. So if we get a little bit of a pickup from the manufacturing sector, we think that could even support a stronger freight outlook.
Hey, Chris, thanks a lot. We really appreciate it. Bloomberg Intelligence industry analyst Chris Giolino.
Coming up on the program, Retail in Focus.
I'm actually not buying shoes this year. I'm buying furniture. I feel like there that's a trend. Yeah, you're listening to Bloomberg Intelligence on Bloomberg Radio, providing in-depth research and data on 2,000 companies and 130 industries. You can access Bloomberg Intelligence through BIGO on the terminal. I'm Alex Steele.
And I'm Paul Sweeney. It's 39 minutes past the hour, and this is Bloomberg.